The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're planning on betting college football bowl games, good luck. No, seriously, it's never been harder. And you don't want to be hurting your bankroll. You want to make sure you're doing your homework. Listen to Cash the Ticket. Mike Valeni and I will be breaking down every single bowl game, dropping new episodes nearly every day throughout college football's postseason. Spicing things up with a 12-team playoff. Can't wait to see some of those teams from the South come up north for the snow. Be sure to subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, Doug is here live, but he's also a Memorex. Got a couple of segments with an incredible interview that he taped earlier. We'll get to that in a little bit, but he's going to take some questions from you as well. He's got a lot of information to get to. He was out and about this week, actually shot a video with the Janoski family talking about taking care of your poinsettias. Everything that you'd like to see, that is Doug Oster. Go to DougOster.com. 10th caller right now wins an amazing $25 gift certificate from the folks at Sorgles, 412-922-1020. Here he is, the star of the show, Mr. Doug Oster. Doug.
I do have a great guest today that I taped an interview with, Lou Meyer, and I have worked with Davey Tree for many, many years, and I love talking to him. We're going to talk all about, you're going to learn everything you ever wanted to learn about black walnuts and the black walnut myth. I've been taught my whole life that you can't grow anything under a black walnut because it has a chemical in there that stops things from growing. Well, I think Lou's going to set us straight. And talking about poinsettias, Rob, you made a video out there at Janoski's about the poinsettias?
A little bit, yeah. And you did too, though, didn't you?
I did a segment on Pittsburgh Today Live about poinsettias. But the number one thing is go to a local nursery to get a good plant. A fresh plant makes all the difference in the world. And I'm not sure what every other local nursery is doing, if they're growing their own or not, but I know Janoski's grows their own, and it just makes a big difference. When you get them in a nursery, you know they've been taken care of. They've been watered right, that sort of thing. And so just look for a good, healthy plant. And the number one thing that people do that only makes that plant last maybe a couple weeks is overwatering. And so let that thing dry out. Now, I keep the foil on, but I know how to water. I can just pick that plant up, and I know, and I keep the foil on because I don't have to water very often. If you're not experienced at watering that poinsettia, take the foil off, put a little plate or dish underneath there, and then you'll see the water come through, and it'll soak it up. And the thing I always do, you stick your finger down into that dirt as far as it can go. If it's dry, you water it. If it's wet, let it stay. And you can keep a poinsettia going on the windowsill for years. People always sending me pictures of like, look, this one's been for 3 years. And I've known people that have kept them going longer. What I'll do is I'll keep it going. I'll throw it out in the garden after there's no chance of frost left. They can't take cold. And I'll just grow it in the garden as kind of a little shrub and then just let it die with the frost. Your poinsettia shouldn't be the last thing that you pick up on your shopping trip. It should be the first thing you get, It should be the last thing you get. You don't want it sitting in the car when it's cold. And of course, when you get a poinsettia, they're going to put like a plastic wrap on top of it just so you can try and stop the cold wind from freezing it. I moved two boxes of poinsettias from my house, from the nursery to my house, back into the truck and down to PTL without any plant getting frozen. So you can do it, but you can't can't go out by the poinsettia first and leave it in the car and do the rest of your shopping if it's cold and expect it to live. There's lots of other cool holiday plants, which I highlighted on Pittsburgh Today Live, and it's the videos on my website, DougOster.com. But I like, always love having a rosemary Christmas tree. They're inexpensive, easy to grow. With rosemary, you can't underwater it, you can't overwater it. Get your watering down, and it gives you something to do in the winter as far as gardening goes. And rosemary, lavender, of course, Christmas cactus. My Christmas cactuses are just finishing their bloom. Little thing called a frosted fern, which is just a beautiful little kind of green shrub-like thing. It has white on the tips. And then Kalanchoe is a succulent that is great for the windowsill. It has white flowers, pink flowers, red flowers. So check that video out. And I'm so happy for the change in the weather. I have become a winter wimp. You know, growing up in Cleveland, we had real winters. Moved here 20-some years ago. We've had some real winters. And to start off the winter with just a long spell of not even that cold, but cold enough to get my old bones chilled. But with this with this thaw, believe it or not, I still have things that need to be planted because I procrastinated before I went to Iceland. I didn't get them in the ground. I've got hundreds of bulbs that need to go in. That'll be the first job. And looking at the weather, I'm trying to work around the rain. Today I'll be working out in the wind. But also have one shrub that needs to go in that's just been sitting out on the corner of the greenhouse outside. And a couple, three perennials that I have in the greenhouse. And the stuff in the greenhouse did not fare that well when it gets that cold that quick. My cool weather crops, we'll see how it looks as the today when things get up to 50 in the greenhouse. But anything that was tender, it's gone. It was just too cold for too long. And I'm looking forward to being back out in the garden. Being a winter wimp, I'm just basically walking the dogs out there real quick and then coming right back in. But there is some positives to that cool weather as far as thinking ahead to next year. And just that, especially this one pest, hemlock woolly adelgid. Look at your hemlocks, and if it has like kind of a white cottony thing on it, that's hemlock woolly adelgid. But they really get beaten back by cold weather, and so that's a positive. It'll do the same thing for other pests too, and so there is a positive. Now, also with the warmer weather, I'm going to go. I did a speaking engagement, and I just traded the people. They couldn't pay the fee. I just traded for manure, and that's only a gardener would do that. And so now that things have warmed up a little bit, I can go up there, get a nice batch of well-aged manure, and I'm going to put that all where my tomatoes are going to be next year. The garden is all cleared out. And except for the cool weather crops. And I'll be interested, too, to see how those did. I have not looked in the cold frames and under protection. I had some arugula and kale out there. Some lettuce, which I don't have high hopes for the lettuce. Maybe the parsley. We'll see. But getting that manure is going to be a great thing. I really want to get ready for the season. And that's something we can do right now is improve the soil. The ground is still hard. And we can get that wheelbarrow in and out of the garden. And so that'll just be good to get that ready for next year. And I talked about it a lot, but I'm running low on seats for the Chelsea Flower Show in London next May. One of my favorite places to go is London, and I've really had a lot of fun with the travel since 2013. I actually posted a picture on my Facebook page from Notre Dame yesterday, Notre Dame Cathedral, since it reopened, which is thrilling. Because I've seen it twice, and I had this picture where we were just in front of the cathedral, and a couple was like kind of posing for their wedding photos, and he kind of lifted her up, and the pigeons started flying. So that was from 2015, and it got a lot of good response. Take a look at it. But yes, this May, going back to England, Chelsea Flower Show, all these gardens, we'll see the City of London, and best of all, direct flight. think I've got about 8 seats left, and you still get a discount to book the trip through January 15th. Chelsea Flower Show, St. Paul's Cathedral, Westminster Abbey, Tower of London. One place I haven't seen in a long time, Hampton Court Palace and Gardens, St. James Park. One of my favorite gardens is Wisley. I posted a picture on Facebook from Saville Gardens. It's the only place I've ever seen the Himalayan blue poppy growing like outside in a garden. We see it at Phipps, and even at then, it's hard to grow. And then we're going to go about 2 hours south of London to Sissinghurst Castle and Gardens. Windsor Castle is part of the tour. It is going to be fun. As I said, I got about 8 seats left. And so if you think the trip's right for you, just take a look at DougOster.com and see what you think.
All right, what's coming up after the break?
We're going to talk to Lou Meyer all about black walnuts and what was called the black walnut myth.
Back with more of Doug Oster, DougOster.com, the organic gardener on KDKA.
Well, I'm excited to welcome my old friend Lou Meyer to the show. He is a regional business developer for the Davy Tree Expert Company in Maryland and Washington, D.C. And Lou and I have worked together with Davy for many, many years. And today he's going to tell us all about what's called the black walnut myth. Well, Lou, I'm very excited about today's topic because I've been taught my whole life that you can't grow much of anything under a black walnut tree because it has some kind of property that stops things from growing. You and I had talked a couple months ago, and I just mentioned black walnuts, and you told me I didn't know what I was talking about.
Well, you're not wrong for thinking that, but we will discuss some interesting stuff that's coming out the past few years regarding those. But before we get to there, let's dive into what black walnuts are and why they're important and where they're growing. How's that sound?
That sounds good to me. Tell me everything you know about black walnuts.
Yeah, so they're part of the Juglandaceae family. So we'll get kind of technical here. The black walnuts, the Juglans nigra, part of the Juglandaceae family. So Juglandaceae, it's a family with about 50 different species. It's around the world, but North America, Southeast Asia and Eurasia are the big areas for that. You would recognize walnuts, pecans, and hickories as part of that group. And, you know, all three of those are important trees in North America for sure. Juglans nigra itself, the black walnut, grows from southern Ontario west out to the Dakotas. They've got them in Colorado, down to Georgia, Florida, Texas. Not a whole lot in North Carolina, but here we are in the Mid-Atlantic, myself and you, and, you know, that's ground zero for black walnuts. They're very populated here. Now, the first thing people think about when you hear black walnuts, they go, oh, I love eating walnuts. Yeah, you're probably eating Persian walnuts, Juglans regia, which is the royal walnut. So it's a little different. But we do eat black walnuts too. I'll talk a little bit about that later. So do you have any on your property?
I don't have any black walnuts, but I have a story.
Okay.
I had someone send me a message saying that right before school started, their kids got into some black walnuts out in the woods. And she wanted to know how to get that black dye off their hands. And I had no answer for her.
Right. Yeah. No, once that sets in, it's there. So that's where the name comes from. It's from the dye. And it is a dye. So it's that color. It's found in the droop, which is a fancy word for that round ball that falls off the tree. So that the husk is the outer shell and the kernel is the fruit inside. And together, those are a droop. And yeah, they got the dye on them. Actually, historically, Native Americans used the dye for all sorts of things. And through the mid-1900s, I think, we used it as hair dye. So for folks who were graying, you would use black walnut dye in your hair. And it's brownish to black. But yeah, once it's on, it's set in your hands.
I think it just has to wear itself out.
It does. The great news is there's no health effects from it, and it's all natural. So it's not just some weird, you know, chemical dye that you have on you. It's all natural. So
you say they're edible. Do people eat black walnuts?
Yeah, regularly? They sure do. Yeah. So you could eat them in all sorts of ways. You can crush them up, the nut itself, use them as toppings on ice cream, used in baked goods a lot. So, you know, fudge brownies with walnuts on them. Again, if you're buying them commercially, you're probably going to get Persian walnuts. And here's why. That droop that we were talking about where the fruit of it. Persian walnuts are a lot softer and less brittle, so they're much easier to break open. And that makes for a much easier processing of that nut in a commercial way. The flavor is slightly different, but for most of us, we wouldn't be able to tell the difference. You get more bang for your buck with the Persian walnuts. But yeah, no, you could use it on baked goods. You can crust chicken or fish. I'm a big grill guy. I like grilling stuff. You can crust your chicken or fish before you grill them or fry them.
If we had black walnuts on the property, is that dye always on there? I'm just thinking, if you're going to crack open black walnuts, how do you do it without getting that dye on you? Or is there times where the dye isn't as bad?
Nope, you're going to get dyed. So use gloves or just accept the fact that you're going to have some dye. Now, if you have a black walnut near you and you're looking to capitalize on that, you could either put a bunch of them on your driveway and run them over with your car. Or another option is to take a 2x4 or any piece of lumber, I guess, put it over a 5-gallon bucket and drill a 1.5-inch hole. Use a one of the drills that have the wider heads on them. And you place the black walnut with the husk on that, just like a hammer, and smack it. And the shell falls apart. The nut goes into the kernel goes into your bucket. And then you dry it out, and you're good to go. So one other kind of fun way, and I always love talking about edible possibilities with trees. One fun tradition is actually an Italian tradition. There's a liqueur called Nocello. And you can buy it commercially if you want, but my brother-in-law, Dan, back in Cincinnati, shout out to Dan, makes a really good one where he collects the walnuts as soon as they fall off the trees when they're green, shoves them in a bottle or a jar, a big jar, and puts, I think, vodka in with it, and with herbs and spices. And traditionally, you let it sit until just after Thanksgiving, early December, and at that time, you pour it out into a filter, and you have this spectacular walnut liqueur that's, you know, a lot of fun. So,
all right. So next time I'm in Baltimore, I need a little bit of that. And then what is that pie that you love? The maple?
Oh, the maple cream pie. Yeah.
Maple cream pie. Okay. So you put that on your list when I come to Baltimore in January. You know, Lou and I always see each other at a trade show there called the Mid-Atlantic Nursery Trade Show. Those are two things to put on the list. Okay.
You better believe it. I like to take care of my buddy, Doug.
How big do those black walnut trees get?
They can get pretty big. You know, in ideal settings, they can get up to 100 feet tall, and they've got a wide spread of 65 feet or so. They're a wide spreading tree. Really pretty. They've got pinnately compound leaves. So they got a good way to put it is each leaf is actually made up of multiple leaflets. So you've got a long stem down the center with little tiny leaflets coming off the side, which all look like individual leaves, but that one thing is a leaf. So they're great shade trees. They create a lot of shade.
All right, Lou, we're going to take a little break right now. Thanks for schooling us on the black walnut. When we come back, it's all about that black walnut myth that things can't grow underneath that tree. We're back with Lou Meyer from the Davey Tree Expert Company, and we're going to talk all about the black walnut myth. So let's get to whether I can plant something underneath my black walnut or not. What is it in a black walnut that I've always been told stops many plants from surviving?
So it's a phenomenon called allelopathy, A-L-L-E-L-O-P-A-T-H-Y. It's a tough word for me to say. Allelopathy. Allelopathy is a broad term that basically applies to all plants that produce chemicals or other things that prohibit other plants from growing around it. For the walnuts, they're part of the Juglandaceae family, and they produce a compound called juglone or juglons. That is found in those drupes, the fruit, right? and also in the roots of the tree. And historically, ever since I joined the industry back in, 2001, when I started paying attention to gardening and landscaping, black walnuts were the tree that you don't want anywhere near your garden because nothing grows underneath them because of the jug loans. They kill anything around them. You know, nature is a wild place, and there's all sorts of defenses that trees and shrubs put up against other competition, against pests and diseases, particularly to black walnut, this jug loans. And multiple extension agencies have gone back and said that this is a big issue, that you shouldn't plant underneath these. But they all cite two articles. One was an extension article from Cornell University in 1973, and the other one's from Ohio State in 1993. And there's a professor out at Washington State University, Dr. Linda Chalker Scott, who in 2019 started digging into this. And she said, look, all these peripheral articles, they're not original research. They all cite these two articles, Cornell and Ohio State. And when she went to look for these two articles, the Cornell one had been pulled because it had been such a long time. And the Ohio State one, she couldn't find, nor could the Ohio State archives. And so she started running research on this. And in lab settings, yes, when you apply the jug loan directly to seeds or seedlings, those seeds will be stunted. They will die sometimes. It really wrecks them. But there's been no field studies that have conclusively shown that there's jug loan in the soil that affects the trees and shrubs around them. Now, there is limited growth underneath walnuts sometimes, but no less than other shady trees. You can't grow tomatoes under an oak tree. It's not because of jug loans. It's because there's no sunlight and they need a lot of sun. Walnuts are also very fast-growing trees, so they require a tremendous amount of input. They pull a lot of water and a lot of nutrients out of the soil to fuel that growth. So it's really tough for stuff to grow underneath them. One other thing that I feel worth mentioning, because you did an article on mulch recently, a lot of people shy away from walnut mulch, wood chips, walnut wood chips, for the exact same reason. Well, jug loan doesn't make its way up into the canopy of the tree. It's only found in the droop and the roots. So walnut chips are great to use, no problem.
Well, this is fascinating and so wild that just two scientific papers, which to this point can't be found, has perpetuated to almost everyone in the garden industry that you can't grow anything under a black walnut tree.
Yeah. It even goes back to the first century. So historian Pliny the Elder from way long ago, he actually has a quote that said, "The shadow of walnut trees is poison to all plants within its compass." But I don't think he was doing many lab studies.
Yeah, but he knew, just like we do. You know, when I tell people, what should I grow under an oak tree? And I say, a bench underneath there.
A mulch bed is spectacular. I have all sorts of properties that I've taken care of that have beautiful hosta gardens under their walnuts, beautiful coleus, all sorts of shade loving plants that can grow underneath them.
What else could I grow underneath there? Could I grow a tough shade loving shrub underneath it possibly, or there's not enough water, not enough fertilizer?
Well, if it's in your landscape that you have irrigated and you have, an arborist coming through and fertilizing it, I don't see why not. Some hydrangeas that can do shade. My dad has an oak tree back in Cincinnati that is huge and it's heavily shade underneath it. And he has a bottle brush buckeye that is just gorgeous that surrounds the bottom of the base of the tree. So, yeah, I mean, if you plant it early enough before the shade sets in, you can get away with it. And again, irrigate and fertilize to make sure that the trees and the shrubs are not fighting over the resources too heavy.
Now, have some of the extension agencies and other, like Ohio State, Penn State, have they realized this or accepted it, or what's going on?
The only one that I found was the University of Maryland. Oh, Terrapins, my Terrapins have said, hey, we should really start rethinking this. And they put a citation on their extension page, on their walnut page, saying that, you know, this is starting to, we're starting to realize that this may all be wrong. Shifting the thought. So, you know, what's really fun about this, Doug, is, you know, horticulture is something that's been practiced forever and a day. And we think we know it all. And we think that it's set in stone. And it's really important to realize that there's a science to this. And there's new research coming out all the time. And we're always learning. And we always should be learning and open to new things. So, you know, nature wins.
I really appreciate your input on this and waking me up to the power of the black walnut.
You betcha. It's one of my favorite trees. And when I started learning that it's not as aggressive as we thought, it just rose higher in the list.
Well, Lou, thanks so much. Thanks for filling us in on the black walnut. And now we know we can grow something underneath there. It was great to talk to you. I will see you in Baltimore in January for the Mid-Atlantic Nursery Trade Show.
Doug, it's been great. Have a wonderful time.
Well, it was great to talk to Lou. He's a good guy. And like you said, we always, he's, you know, based in Baltimore. We always see each other at that convention. I get a lot of stories there at what's called MANTS, that Mid-Atlantic Nursery Trade Show. I love going every year, find out all the new stuff that gets released and see old friends. And Baltimore's a cool city. So looking forward to seeing him. I think I'm actually going to do a story with him about all these different things that, like the pie from he has some kind of special maple pie or something somebody makes, and then that stuff you drink that's made out of the black walnuts. Just a sip, though, just a sip. So I'm looking forward to seeing that. And again, you know, it's funny how you're taught something for all those years. I've been telling people, oh, no. You can't grow under black walnut. Don't use anything from black walnuts. And there's that juglone in there. It's going to make things so they can't grow. So I do have, do we have time for a question, Rob?
Yeah, go ahead.
I do have one question here from Gary. He says, I've enjoyed a short break from gardening, but I'm getting itchy. I know it's too early to start my pepper seeds, but do you have any ideas for something I can do inside now? And I was thinking about this, and it's what I've been doing, actually, is first off, I love paperwhites. I know people do not like paperwhites for the way they smell, but I love that smell. To me, it smells like a spring daffodil. And so paperwhites are like a buck a piece. You put them in a little pot with some soil in there, and like mine are starting to bloom right now. And I just love them. The other thing is the amaryllis. These are both things we do during the winter. For an amaryllis, there's nothing like that big flower you get from that bulb. But then afterwards, this is the thing. You want to get it to bloom again. And so with an amaryllis, as soon as it's done blooming, you remove the flower stalk, but you leave the foliage. And I talk a lot about this in the show. People always have questions about this. Now you just grow it like a house plant. Until you're ready to put it into dormancy, which is usually, if you want to try and get it to bloom around the holidays, is just around August. You just stop watering, stop fertilizing. The whole top will just die, and the green foliage will turn yellow, and all that energy from the foliage will go to the bulb. Now, we let that bulb sit for maybe 8 weeks. It'll tell you when it's ready to wake up. It'll start to send something up. And then we start watering again. And if there's enough energy in the bulb, it will send the flower up again. If not, it'll just be foliage again. And so you kind of get the hang of it. And with mine, I get a new amaryllis bulb once a year. And so I don't even worry about all the dormancy and everything. They just bloom when they want to bloom. So some will bloom year after year at the holidays. Some will bloom in February. Some will bloom in the spring. And so when you have a bunch of them, my wife's always saying, that thing's dead. I said, it's not dead, it's dormant. And just give it a little water and we get our blooms.
So when I die, they can say, hey, he's not dead, he's dormant. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We will finish up the hour with Doug. If you have a gardening question, feel free to ring us up, 866-391-1020. All right, got some calls. Let's get right to it. Here's Caroline, wants to talk black walnut. Hey, Carolyn, how are you? Are you there, Carolyn? Okay, she's not there. Let's go to Will. Will, poinsettias. Go ahead, Will.
Hello there. How you doing today?
Good. Doing great. What's going on?
Well, I got a little bit of the origin of the poinsettia, supposedly.
All right.
Way back in the early 60s, I went to work for a greenhouse in McDonald called Richard's Greenhouse. And I went to work there to plant poinsettia stock plants. And supposedly the poinsettia is native to Mexico. And a fellow by the name of Paul Ecke brought them to the United States. And he developed the poinsettia stock plant. It looked like an old gnarly-looking piece of wood that we would stick in a bushel basket and fill it full of dirt and stick it in the greenhouse. This happened around, I was wanted to say, somewhere around February or March. And after watering for a while, they would send out little shoots, little sprouts. And the old man would come along and he'd cut those little shoots off, and then we would plant them in a bed with, I think it was sand, some type of peat, and probably vermiculite. And we'd plant like hundreds of them. And they put it under a mister. And then pretty soon those little shoots would develop a root system. So then we would put them in one of the real small pots, and they would start to grow there. And then once that happened, then we would take them from the little pot and put them in the bigger pots, and that's where they stayed for the Christmas season all year. But the plant actually started out in Mexico, and it was called a stock plant, and it was developed by Paul Ecke was the name. And that was the only poinsettia back, this was the early 60s, mind you, I went to work at the greenhouse, and I was just a kid, and I went to work there as a laborer there, but he grew no flowers. I didn't grow no flowers. I shoveled a lot of dirt and a lot of coal. But nevertheless, I went to work there, and at that time, minimum wage was $1.25 an hour, and I thought I was rich. But nevertheless, we would plant those, and it was Paul Ecke, and if you had a Paul Ecke poinsettia, that was the premium poinsettia there was. That was, in fact, at that time, I think it was the only poinsettia here in the States. And they were only white and red. There was none of the variegated varieties and none of that stuff that you see today. That was all mutated over the years that became the poinsettias that you see today. And, you know, you never hear the word Paul Ecke anymore, but that's where they're at. He brought them from Mexico. He, I guess, visited down in Mexico. He was probably a horticulturist here somewhere.
Yeah, that story sounds familiar to me, and that name sounds familiar to me, too, related to poinsettias. One more thing about poinsettias that we should know is, and I asked this or get this question asked all the time, and thanks for your call, by the way, are poinsettias poisonous? And so they're toxic, but you would have to, like a little kid would have to eat so many of them just to get a stomach ache that they would never do it. And the other thing with you know, animals or small kids, this white sap that comes out of a poinsettia is really awful tasting. And so you wouldn't really even get by one bite. So if you're, you know, if you're not getting poinsettias because you have cats, that's usually what I get is like, well, we're not going to get poinsettias this year. We've got a new cat and this and that. I'm like, the cat, even if the cat does taste that poinsettia, it will only taste it once. And so you really don't have to worry about them. And they're just such great plants for the holiday season. And I love that story about just starting those plants that way and potting them up. And I love keeping them going all winter long. I do have another question here from Carrie. It says, can I still plant bulbs? And so we talked about this at the top of the show. Oh, wait, there's a call real quick. Can we do that?
I got less than a minute. Carolyn, all right. Go ahead, Carolyn, quickly, please.
Yes, I have had a black walnut tree years ago and had it cut down because it was a mess to clean up after the end of the season. But I'm having squirrels plant me all this trees in my yard, and I keep picking them up and throw them out. If you want some, Doug, you can get some from my house next summer.
All right. Thanks for your call. That was great.
All right, listen, take us home, Doug.
Remember, organic gardeners, you make our world brighter and safer with each seed you sow and every garden you grow.
Little holiday baking coming up next on the Coons Cooking Hour with your Pratt Pack on KDKA.